Are you looking to become a leader in a very exciting industry like tech? Do you want to have fun at work? How can you learn to read people beyond what they're saying? If you want the answer to any of these questions, keep listening. My guest today covers all that and more as we dive into her background and experience in tech, from launching Xbox to being on the forefront of tech that hasn't even come out yet. Ready to get started? Let's dive in. Welcome to Business Isn't Hard. Today, I'm joined by Parissa Zander, a global marketing leader who has shaped how some of the world's biggest brands show up in the real world. Parissa has led channel and partner experience at Meta, and before that, she held leadership roles at Microsoft and Samsung, where she built teams responsible for bringing technology to life through immersive retail experiences. From launching global store concepts to defining what customer engagement looks like for iconic brands, Parissa's work has redefined how people connect with technology. Outside of work, Parissa is extremely passionate about animal welfare and giving back to her community, and I'm super excited to have her on today. Parissa, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Thank you for being on. This is going to be great. I'd love to get a little bit more into your background. I know you spent a lot of time at Microsoft and then at Meta. Can you tell me a little bit more about, you know, how you got here today?
Yeah, well, I graduated from San Jose State in advertising and held a bunch of different jobs in the agency world, and got my first like real glimpse into tech when I was working at one of those agencies, and one of my clients was in gaming, and that started a love affair, quite honestly, around gaming, the fan base, and just what it has done for society, to be honest. And so very quickly after working in the agency side, I was lucky enough to land and work at Sierra Online. And that really jump-started my career. That was on the product marketing side. So I got to have a really good sense of how engineering and marketing bridge the gaps together to bring a product to life. And, you know, fast forward and landed at Microsoft. And I was part of the original team that basically launched Xbox inside the USA.
That's awesome.
So after that, held, I don't know how many different jobs, probably four or five different jobs at the company. Left and went to Samsung for a very brief stint to run their retail in the US, and then came back to Microsoft because there was this amazing opportunity, and, you know, worked in the US subsidiary to really build out that arm of retail, and left about 3.5 years ago to go to Meta and basically do it all again. But this time, working on MR, so mixed reality and augmented reality side of house. And I led all of the global work around customer experiences, which is basically from the minute that you pick up your phone and start searching for a product to how you see it in store. That was led by my team. So I did that for about 3 years, and then I am recently retired. As of
congratulations.
A month ago.
Wow, there you go.
Very quick nutshell of experience.
That's all. I mean, you've touched so many cool things across your career, which is absolutely amazing. So going back to the beginning, you majored in advertising, and then you kind of head straight into the advertising, and you've kind of spent your, you know, your entire career somewhere in that marketing, advertising, customer experience space. Was that something you always knew you wanted to do? Or like, to what extent did you know, like, this is kind of what I want to do back when you were just starting out?
Well, it's funny. When I first went to college, I went in as a radio, television, film major. I wanted to be a DJ. Like, that is my jam. I loved music, and I just thought it would be such a fun career. And what's funny is, you know, all those crazy electives that they make you take in college, and you're like, why am I taking this stupid elective? I'm never going to do anything with it. Well, this one stuck because I decided to take a class in advertising. And I kid you not, week one of getting the syllabus and talking to the professor, I fell in love with that side of the house.
Wow.
So it was absolute, happenstance that it just happened. And it was very, I was very lucky because I knew as soon as the first week that this is where I wanted to spend my time.
That's super interesting. And so then you go and you kind of bounce around at a few small companies. You get, your job in agency. Was that kind of start and on more of the agency side, smaller company, beneficial for starting your career in like the corporate landscape? Or how did those connect? If you had to go back, would you do it the same way, or would you just go straight to a
Absolutely.
larger company?
Absolutely. Because here's the thing about smaller companies. They give you the opportunity to dip your toe in anything you want to do, right? And so, they need someone to go ahead and do a pitch. Guess what? That's you. They need someone to go send mail. That was me. Like, I literally did everything. And I was able to work with the creatives. I was able to work with the media team. And so if I had gone to a larger agency and my like purview was, oh, you're going to be an exec, account executive, and that's all you're going to do, I don't think I would have been as well-rounded as I ended up being when I got to a larger company. And I think that's what helped me get my foot in the door, quite honestly, because when I was having those conversations and interviews, it's like, oh, okay, she's got kind of a knack for this, or oh, she knows how to do this. And it wasn't just like, hey, I've stayed in my lane, which happens a lot when you go directly into a larger company.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think a lot of the times, people, I think it's a more common path, I'll say, for people to go from a larger company and then jump to like a smaller company, like a startup, and you kind of did the opposite. Was there, what was the biggest difference between the two? Obviously, you got to really try a lot of things in the smaller company versus you stay in your lane in the big company. But beyond that, is there like a culture difference? Is there like a leadership difference? I'm curious, like, what your take on like the differences between these two like vastly
Oh, yeah.
different sizes of companies are.
That's a great question. I was actually given a lot more leeway in the smaller company, quite honestly, because there wasn't that many of us. So it's like I said, if it was like, hey, we need someone to go do a pitch to this client, well, guess what? There was like four of us who could do that. And it's a very different mentality in the larger company, right? And so you were given more opportunities, I feel like. And there wasn't stacks and stacks and stacks of people above me. There was anybody. It was like me and my boss. So it was like you got thrown into the deep end pretty quickly.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And I mean, a great learning experience, I'm sure, all around. And then you finally jump to Microsoft. What was that like on your very first day? Was it like a big, was it like a kind of a shock, or did you fully expect it? Or I'm curious what it was like to start out there.
Well, it was so when I was at Xbox, we were like a company within a company, right? And so when Xbox first started out, we had a startup renegade mentality. There was only 1,000 people working on it globally. So when you think about at the time, there was probably 90,000 people at Microsoft. 1,000 people is nothing. And so, again, it was very startup-esque, where I could be standing in the middle of the hallway, and I kid you not, I actually did this, where I was packing backpacks with a bunch of freebies, right? And then literally 25 minutes later, I'm, on a call with a buyer trying to sell in Halo. So it was just like everybody basically pitched it. Nobody had really this mentality of hierarchy, which was amazing, right? Everybody just wanted the product to be successful. And so you did anything and everything that was asked of you.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm curious. I mean, I know you kind of that was like your first, I guess role that I'll say at Microsoft, but how are you able to build that kind of culture? Because I think that's a kind of, feeling in a place that a lot of people would love to work in, but it's obviously not exactly the most common thing. I'm wondering
No.
if you have any like advice or insight into like how that really came about, because it sounds like a really, really cool experience.
Yeah, here's my thing. Like, I've always thought this, and even to before I retired, like, it has to come from the top. You have to roll up your sleeve and like get dirty with folks, right? And so I think because of the fact that we had, our CMO literally in the halls stuffing backpacks with like the interns, it just built that camaraderie of we're kind of in this together. I hate using the term of like, oh, we were family because, I've seen it come about where it really did feel like family, because you spend so much time with them. But then there's also the other case of we're family and, people end up getting fired. So, it could go either way. But in those early years, I think because of the fact that it came from top down that they were willing to get, their hands dirty, that it helped build this trust with everybody around them. And that just built that culture. And so all of the management felt that way. And that was something that when I, as a, younger in role, newer in role, that helped me try to figure out, okay, as a manager, as I grow, like, what do I want to emulate? And that's something that I've tried to do throughout my whole career.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And what was that, I guess, that transition like for going from, a person working in an agency who's kind of just, a really a big doer to like a full-on leader? Obviously, it was a bit of a slow process for you, but how were you able to really learn and then just do like frankly like a great job in, that leadership, those leadership roles?
Well, I'll be honest with you, Oliver. It was I didn't do a great job at the beginning. I'll be the first one to say it. Like, I was a total freaking pain in the ass. And it was a rough transition. And this happens a lot. A lot of like folks when they make that transition from IC to so individual contributor to being a manager, it's rough and super bumpy. And it gets even bumpier when you are now basically managing your friends. That
Yeah, oh,
sucks.
that is a weird
Nobody
feeling, huh?
teaches you. No one teaches you how to make that transition, right? And the hardest is when you need to have tough conversations. Like, that is the worst. When you have to tell like one of your friends or one of your best friends, like, dude, you got to step up your game because this isn't going to work anymore. And you go from not being able to tell this person everything you used to tell them, right? And you have to scale back because they're, even though they are your friends, you have to put up a wall. Like, it's, and that really, really sucks. And I learned really the hard way on that. I lost a couple of friendships around that. Because there was no manual. And, during that time, when you're trying to prove yourself as a manager and you want to be seen as an up and comer and you want to like be successful that they took a chance on you, it's really, really rough. So my first, I would say 7 to 8 years, not the best manager. And it was only really when I got into my mid-30s, I'll be honest, that things started to kind of click of, hey, now I've been at the company for a while. I've established myself. I know what I'm doing. I don't need to prove anything to anybody because I've already proved it, right? So it gave me a chance to really look, do a self-reflection and look back in the mirror and go, why were you like that, right? And help with the new group of folks that I was starting to manage, right? Then I was allowed to be truly my authentic self and kind of help shape me of where I ended up as a manager in the end.
Yeah, no,
The
that makes a
first
lot of
few
sense.
years were, well,
Yeah, not the greatest. And now I am really curious for those people who are going to have those experiences going from like a really just like a co-working friend to someone who, now all of a sudden you're managing your friends. Do you have any advice on how to do these conversations? Because I'm sure it's going to come up for people in the future. And I, you know, frankly, I just don't even know how you would start to approach that.
Looking back, I wish I had had the direct conversations with my friends before I even went for the role, right? Of like, hey, how are you going to feel if I get this job? Right? And I know you're going to say, I want you to go for it. But I think we should, like, at this point, establish boundaries, right? Of like, work is work, and we're going to have to be okay with if I'm going to have hard conversations, et cetera, with you. And personal life is going to be completely different, right? And we need to make the decision that we're not going to talk about work when we're together. Because I think that, quite honestly, was the hardest part because we didn't have those boundaries. So it always bled into everything, right? On the weekends, et cetera. And so, it's human nature. You can't help it. Like something comes up and you start talking about work. And so, I think that's really important. We got to a point later on in my like career when I was establishing relationships with people who ended up becoming very good friends of mine. We didn't bring our phones ever when we went to go out. It was like, no one's going to be on their phone checking email. No one's going to react when somebody comes through. Like, the boundaries are we're not going to talk about work and we're going to leave it very much around kids, activities, significant others, whatever, family, whatever it is. But everything else kind of gets put aside while we're together.
No, okay, that makes a lot of sense actually. That's a really good tip. I think having those boundaries sounds like it'd be, really important. I mean, in a lot of relationships, but especially in that specific kind. Okay, awesome. So, something I also wanted to ask you about was, so you've become a manager, you've become a leader. And I remember you saying that, something I guess you always try to cultivate in the company you're at is just like an element of fun, which sounds, frankly, really fun to do. But I would love to hear more about, how you did it and just your take on like the balance between fun and work and kind of what that looks like. Because again, I think it's a sort of ideal that a lot of people really strive for, but it's also a really hard thing to achieve.
Totally, especially force fun. Like, we used to have these force fun events at work. And I will tell you, it used to drive me bananas because it was always crap nobody wanted to do, right? And so I made a point of giving the opportunity for folks to raise their hands that were in my team who wanted to be like the head of the fun committee. We used to call it the fun committee. I mean, it's like the cheesiest name ever. But literally, they would be the head of the fun committee, right? And so what was great is they're the ones that would actually work with the rest of the team and figure out what we should do for the month, right? And so it wasn't coming from PZ, right? It was like, hey, this month we want to do a ridiculous trivia game, or we want to do whatever, we want to go out and work at the food bank, whatever it was. I allowed the team to be able to really shape what we did for the month. Now, the only thing that was always mandatory for me, because it's just I've been doing this for a billion years, is Halloween's always been my jam. Always. And so there is literally no other holiday where nobody wants anything from you. You don't have to give out presents. Like, you can do it pretty much on the cheap. You can find stuff in your house and get dressed up, right? So I used to make it mandatory that everybody dressed up on Halloween. And I can't, if I told you how many people bitched and whined, oh no, I don't want to do this. Oh, it's so stupid, right? Well, guess what? Halloween would happen and people would come into work and it was like the doors were blown off. You couldn't get any work done because everybody was screwing around, going from like, office to office to show off their outfits. And we would do, we did a potluck, so you could sign up to bring food in. And I would always go and, out of pocket, I would buy like prizes to give people for, funniest, scariest, goofy costumes. But it was always my way of like making people get out of their comfort zone and try to have some fun. And, like I said, the first few years, everybody bitched and whined about it. And then it was like we would then now, by the end of the time I left Microsoft, in July, we were figuring out what our team outfit was. Like it became
Ridiculous.
the thing. And then all these other teams within the greater organization were piling on and they were doing it. And then it became like this massive deal inside the organization. And so I took that same playbook and I did it at Meta. Now, trying to do that same kind of idea with remote workers, you got to
Little
put a
bit
twist
different.
on it,
Yeah,
right?
there you go.
And so we always did and remote global workers, quite honestly, because in different time zones, so it was crazy.
Yeah.
So, we would do a Teams call or Zoom, whatever it was, and it was like, okay, bring your favorite beverage. I don't need to know what it is. I don't care what's in your cup. Show up,
Okay.
wear your outfit, and we would do a trivia thing and, everybody would play along, and then prizes. So it was, we still tried to keep the ethos of the whole thing. And it turned out to be super, super successful. Again, like
Wow.
the same people that would bitch and whine, like, oh my God, are we really doing this? And I'm going to dress up, I'm going to sit in front of a camera. I'm like, yep, you're going to do it and you're going to enjoy it. And I used to say, I'm like, this is one of those forced funds that I'm making y'all do. So too bad, so sad. And when I left my retirement, like goodbye, that was one of the things that the team kept bringing up of like, oh my gosh, who's going to take this over because we're so sad that this is going away. So.
Wow. That is, I mean, I absolutely love that. I think that is such a cool story. And just for you to find, your thing, the PZ holiday, right? Like, some,
It
that's, it's just so cool. And just for everybody to absolutely, buy into it eventually, too,
is.
it's just, so much fun. So
Yeah,
I
I mean,
really want to get on that.
it was hilarious. When I tell you in July we were planning. It's like, okay, we're gonna nail it. What are the top five ideas? Then off of that, okay, like if we're gonna do whatever the theme was, who are the various characters? It was crazy. But it ended up becoming very, very fun.
That's just so much fun. Like, seriously, to have, you built that culture, I think is super, super cool. Okay, so thank you so much for being on. This is, I mean, loved everything we've talked about. I want to get into a little bit of a lightning round here. So the first question I always ask is, what is your favorite business book or podcast?
Nice girls don't get the corner office.
Okay.
So, it was something that really helped shape the way that I thought about managing
Yeah.
folks. And like I said, it's kind of a weird one, but the first time I read it, I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't know I had all of these different tendencies. And so for me, it really helped shape the manager that I am.
Yeah, I love that. No, that's really cool. Okay, next question is, what is your biggest pet peeve in business?
Whining without trying to come with a solution.
I can see how that would be annoying.
Huge pet peeve. It's like I don't mind if you want to vent to me, but do you have any ideas to like fix it?
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I'll listen to you as long as put your thought into how we can solve it too. So
Yeah,
that
and
makes
it
a lot
may
of
be
sense.
like a joint conversation and you want to like riff off of things, that's totally fine, but like coming and just like verbal vomiting to me and thinking I'm going to fix your problem, that used to drive me crazy.
Yeah, no, I can see how that would. Okay. Next is, what is your best relationship building tip, or what is your best networking tip?
Go out and break bread. And the reason why I say that is some of the hardest relationships I've ever had in business have been bridged over a glass of wine, or quite honestly, a meal. And I think people are too scared to do that and have real conversations with folks. And that has always, always helped me.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think even the, especially in the era, I'll say, of, remote work, it's really having that like fit that like physical face-to-face presence, I'm sure, is like incredibly valuable.
Well, and even, yeah, like you get to the bottom and the root of what folks are either frustrated with or, whatever, by literally listening to them while you're looking at their nonverbal cues. You can see what bothers people very quickly, which you don't always pick up when you're on camera.
Yeah, no, that's a lot. So do you, when you are, I guess, meeting with people, especially in person, are you trying to look at, their body language and their expressions and stuff like that? I mean, on top of just listening to their words?
Oh gosh, yeah. I mean,
Okay.
remember, 80% of what people are trying to convey is based on, how they're feeling. And sometimes folks have a really, really good poker face. So it's hard to read folks, and even harder when you're trying to do it, like you said, remotely.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. Next, and I know we've talked a little bit or talked about leadership a little bit, but what is a skill that every leader should have?
Empathy. I literally cannot stress this enough. There is obviously a place for IQ. You want your boss to have a brain.
Yeah, of course,
That's
right?
like, that's a given. But there are so many folks who are out there who do have zero EQ, and it causes so much chaos. Quite honestly, with the workforce and folks under them, that just sitting and listening and having a little bit of empathy makes a massive difference.
Yeah, and I'll ask a follow-up question here based on, the empathy thing, the EQ, and even before, like just paying attention to people's non-verbal signals.
Yeah.
Do you have like a specific way to learn that? Is that come with time? I mean, obviously some are better than others off the bat, but I'm curious, like, if you were able to strengthen your, I guess I'll say your people's skills over time, or if that just came with practice.
No, that came with practice. And like I said earlier, I wasn't the best manager when I first started out. And a lot of it was having this feeling, quite honestly, because it was a different time. So, you have to preface that. Being a female in tech back then was really, really tough, right? And so I always felt like I had to be the loudest in the freaking room. And that I deserved a seat at the table. And it's only with practice and time that I have learned that just listening to folks, and I mean active listening, not this listening of like, I'm not saying anything, but I'm gonna like already come up with my response of what you just said. Like
Yeah, of
active
course.
listening is a skill that is sorely missed. I feel like right now, people are just constantly trying to either talk over each other, or like I said, they've already formulated what they want to say, so they miss like the last 30 seconds of what this person was saying. And so I feel like that's something that you have to really, really work on every single day.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. I really, really like that. So, and I know you've been in charge of a lot of really cool things, but it's also come with a lot of responsibility. What is your go-to method for handling stress?
Oh, good God. I wish there was a good go-to. I'll be honest with you. Like, I handle it pretty poorly, and poorly in the sense of like not, lashing out at people or some crap like that. Of just, I absorb a lot. And so I know, and my poor husband knows that if I don't work out on a consistent basis, I don't tend to be the nicest person in the world, especially to him.
Okay.
So, he would be the one that's like, I think you should go to yoga, or maybe you should think about going to orangery today. And so, you've got to have that release in whatever it is. I know, like for my daughter, she goes and works out, but she's also an artist, so she paints. So she does other things that like allow her to de-stress, but it's really, really important to find what your thing is. Otherwise, it's just too easy to get sucked into all of it.
Of course. I think, having those things outside that you really enjoy is super important. So thank you so much for being on, Parissa. I'll end with this final question. So over, the entire course of your career, what has been this just the overall key to your success, as a leader, as a contributor, as Parissa as a whole?
I think, just being someone who truly cares about the folks that work for them is something that's missing, right? And so throughout my career, I've always tried to be an empathetic leader that is straightforward, honest. That is a really big deal for me. And someone who feels like they can have the hard conversations when nobody else wants to have them, in a way that allows other people to grow and learn, but deliver the message, right? And so, I've always been this person that relies on her gut, probably more than I should, but relies a lot on her gut. And so, decision making was always key for me because, having folks spin and spin and spin and spin and spin does nothing for anyone except build stress and demoralize folks. So.
I think that's all really great advice. Well, thank you again one last time for being on, Frieza. Really, really enjoyed this conversation. I think you talked about so many cool things, so thank you so much.
Of course, anytime.
That was Parissa Zander, marketing expert for Microsoft and Meta. Parissa's story is one of growth, from taking an advertising elective by chance to leading massive teams in the tech world. One of Parissa's biggest learning opportunities was early in her career at smaller agencies. She was allowed to touch everything, exposing her to a variety of skills and experiences. This made her an attractive candidate to Microsoft when she entered the massive company. Parissa also grew a lot as a leader. She talked about how leadership transitions are hard, and she wasn't great at it at first. But she persisted and eventually was able to lead huge teams in the tech industry. It's a great reminder that no one is perfect, especially when starting out. Sometimes you have to learn the hard way, like Parissa did when balancing personal relationships at the office. Finally, develop your EQ. Parissa talked about how reading people is a superpower in itself, and she's absolutely right. People convey 80% of what they are trying to say in their body language. It's just as important to listen to what they aren't saying as what they are. This is a skill you must develop if you want to become a great leader. Thanks for listening. This week, I encourage you to break bread with someone from work or in your personal life. Meeting them in person will create a much deeper connection than a remote conversation. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, keep building something great. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you.